Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte. And in the studio today, I'm very happy, first of all, very happy to be back in the studio. It's been a little over a month. Been very busy opening a bar. Thanks, Jack. And I'm happy to have with me in the studio two of my favorite people who also just opened up an incredible bar called Leanda in Carroll Gardens. Welcome to the show, Ivy Mix and Julie Reiner.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Now, you guys have both been on here before, but in separate, we're talking about some different things, talking about Speed Rack, talking about these different events like the Google Moon, and it's just great to have you both in the studio today together. So it's great.
Yeah, this is fun.
Yeah.
It's a different setting.
Yeah.
To see each other.
So, so why don't you start us at the beginning? What was the inspiration and how did this all come about with the opening of the new bar, Leanda?
Well, I'll kind of give the lay of the land. Basically, what ended up happening, I'd been working for Julie for 5 years, I think, something like this. And it was in December, and Julie sends me a text message. I'm bartending in Art Basel, and she sends me a text message like, hey, I need to talk to you when you get home. Can you please just come to the bar? And my immediate response, or in my head, I'm like, God, what did I do? Like,
you gotta run out on my tab.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know.
I forgot to cover my shift.
Yeah, like, shit, what did I do? Damn, okay, we gotta pull this together. So I'm like, is that the okay? She's like, yeah, of course. So I land from Miami, and I go to Clover Club, and not only is Julie there, but Susan and Christine, who are partners at Clover Club and at Leanda, are also there. And I'm like, oh man, now I'm really in trouble. And I sit down. They're like, hey, there's a space that opened up across the street. The same landlord as Clover Club had a place across the street. Like, it's available. He approached us about doing something in that space. It's not really the most ideal time in the world to open a bar, but we want to do it and we want you to be involved. And my immediate response was like, whoa, oh my God, this is crazy. I had been working for a year trying to open up my own bar, totally different idea, different concept, but similar to kind of getting a bartending job in New York. You can't become a bartender until you've bartended, and similar to opening a bar, you can't open a bar until are a bar owner. So this is catch-22 that kind of gets you. So they approached me like, we want to do something that's totally different than Clover Club, but still cocktail oriented, obviously. They want to do something that was like tequila, mezcal, something like this. I'm like, yeah, well, if we do this, but we make it all-encompassing, like not just pigeonhole ourselves into this taco, chimichanga, tequila, you know, world.
But, sombrero.
Yeah, exactly. Cinco de Mayo. I mean, I love sombreros.
Every day is Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah. But why don't we try to, like, go further south? Like, why don't we go visit and be part of Guatemala, where I lived for many years, or even Argentina, where I also lived, or Peru, or all these other places. So I said yes. We started putting the identity together and working like, okay, what's it going to be? And Leyenda is kind of an all-encompassing Latin place. But, you know, like I said, we have tequila, we have mezcal, we also have pisco, and we have cachaça, and we have got all the rums from all the islands. And additionally, we kind of play homage to some old world places. Like, we've got a bunch of sherry. We have sherry on draft, which is amazing.
I just heard about that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's the greatest.
It's pretty gangster.
It's pretty gangster. Yeah. But yeah, when we're just kind of being that part of the world while still recognizing the fact that we are indeed in Brooklyn, like, this isn't supposed to be the place, like, it's an oasis. I feel like I'm in Tulum. It's like, oh, I'm sure in Brooklyn, you know? And, you know, you have your place up the street and we have this place, and we're very proud to be part of this neighborhood that's happening. It's just a bit of a different vibe.
Yeah. I like it because, I mean, to me, there's never a bad time for drinks of that style, you know. It's like, yeah, clearly, like, on a day like today where it's like, you know, in the 80s and super humid and gross, like, I want to drink really refreshing, awesome cocktails. But yeah, then also, you know, in those really shitty, cold New York winter days when you're like walking through a foot of snow that doesn't look like snow anymore. You really want that escapism from having like these style of drinks as well. But I mean, like, it's, to me, it's always been very versatile too. Like, there's a lot of like cool drinks that you can do with those ingredients that are definitely like more of the like old school boozy stirred cocktails, you know? Yeah. And you guys definitely have some of those on the menu. I've been there like 3 times now and I'm working my way through the menu.
I was teasing Damon the last time he came in because he just opened a bar. I was like, why do I see you here all the time? Shouldn't you be in your bar?
Trust me, I have been. I get to come in like
it's close.
And have like
it's
one
close
drink.
By.
It's on my walk home.
It's that, you know, 15 minutes that you have to throw a daiquiri back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think it's really great that we have that stuff going on in the neighborhood right now. I mean, when Clover Club first opened, even when I first started working in Clover Club, which is now 4.5 years ago when I first started working there, or 4 years ago, but it was kind of like the only thing around for that store. And then Long Island Bar opened, and then Grand Army opened. Now there's Leyenda. You can kind of do this little...
You can crawl.
It's a crawl. You can, and people come in. Like, people used to come into Clover Club when I worked there, and they'd be like, where else should I go? And I'd be like, well, you can go down to Prime Meats and go visit Damon, and that's cool. I'm like, but
otherwise, you have to head north or into the city,
or just go to Manhattan, you know. And now it's like,
yeah, well, it's really great to see the neighborhood. I mean, Clover Club has been there for 7 years, so to see this sort of, you know, where the neighborhood has gone, and now we have this crawl of places. It's really becoming more of a cocktail destination.
Yeah, and they're all very different.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. All those places, that they're all so different, but yet so cool.
Yeah, and they're also like, I kind of like what's going on with the like, even like if you're popping around, like there's some cool places like to grab snacks, like go to French Louis and get some like radishes and butter, you know, like
just like, for sure,
you know, like they're. No, I've always lived Carroll Gardens. I've been living there for pretty much the entire time I've lived in New York. And it's just amazing to see how much stuff there is. There's stuff to do, you know? Like, it's been really incredible.
It's good. We, at Landa, just to get back to that for a sec, we approached Sue Torres to be our chef there as for food-wise. And it was funny because when we first started talking about it, and Christine and Sue and I wanted to approach Ivia, and I said, oh, wouldn't it be awesome if we could get Sue Torres? Because I used to go into Sueño's in the city all the time, because it was between my house and Flatiron Lounge, and so I was there a lot eating her food. And then when we met with Ivy was like, oh, I should call my friend Sue Torres. So I was like, of course you know Sue Torres, and she's your friend. So she was like the only chef we even ever discussed, which was cool.
And it's amazing. People come in to Leyenda, and I mean, because of the pedigree of Julie and then me, kind of, you know, people expect the cocktails to be good, you know, but then everyone just goes, my God, the food, like the food is really, really spectacular. I'm like, yeah, this food is spectacular. But Sue is so in another world of culinary excellence. She's fantastic. And she also, I mean, similar to me, the first time that we actually can't remember when we met Sue and I, which I think my best
that's
friends,
good,
I can't remember when
that's
I
a
met
good
them.
Thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
Exactly. The other day, she's like, how did we meet? I'm like, I don't know. And, but she, you know, she and I, when I remember this one time we really bonded. We're both sitting there. We're like, we don't really know how we ended up being born where we were born. Like, how I ended up being born in central Vermont with like population 600 and no one speaks Spanish is beyond me. Like, my soul is from a different part of the world, and she feels the same way. I think it really reflects in the way that we both make things that you eat and drink.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's awesome.
I wish she could have been in here today. That would have been...
We can phone a friend.
Well, yeah.
She's usually with her kids, so it's tough.
Yeah, that's cool. It's a big studio. We can get as many people in there as we need. The food is great, and it's really thoughtfully paired with the, you know, like the bar side of things, too.
Yeah.
It's like... You can get full on like crazy, you know, and like see how many plates you can get dirty, which is like my favorite game.
run, food runner, run.
Yeah. But then there's also, it's like you can get super snacky and light and, like you said, have daiquiri.
Yeah.
Daiquiri
yeah.
and a snackery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So style wise, like going back to like the drinks, I know you used to live in Guatemala, right?
I lived in Guatemala off and on for 4 years. I also lived in Argentina for like 6 or 7 months, and Peru. And I just traveled all. I mean, there's not many countries in that part of the world I haven't been to.
It's awesome.
Yes.
I'm jealous. Yeah, I've been to Cabo. That's as far as I've
been. Like, I'm jealous of the younger me. I'm like, man, I want to go back. But yeah, it's
can't
awesome.
Can't go back, Ivy.
Not for a while.
I think about the younger me, too. Guess what?
Not happening.
Now you're handcuffed to Smith Street.
Yeah. Well, it's not a bad place to be, that's for sure. Yeah. But you got to, you worked at Cafe NSA, and that was like, you were probably like really like, I mean, you were definitely like thrown into that whole world. It's kind of, it's, to me, it's, you know, we get like pretty much anything we want here, and it's awesome to, I'm sure it was awesome to like go to a place where it's like, this is like what we do.
Oh, yeah.
And there's not like a whole lot, so you just get like totally submerged into the culture, you know?
I mean, it's funny, it was like my first bartending job when I got down there, it was not cocktail, it was no cocktail. It was, I worked in a tequila, mezcal, and beer bar. That's like, sometimes people would ask for a mojito, and there's always this like, God, how do you make a mojito? And everyone's kind of scratching their heads, rolling around, like, I think you just tap this mint with a little bit of sugar and lime, right? We put lime in there, right? And this is a whole conversation that was, I mean, we ate with agua de yente instead of rum. This is like horrible. But yeah, it was a really crazy time living down there and working down there. But my favorite part about living down there and doing all that was that it was much more about like the community of the bar. Mm-hmm. Rather, I mean, the drinks were great. We've done great tequila and great mezcal and all that. But it was, the greatest thing that taught me was, this is how you create a family and a bar. Like, in the end, I want to reflect that as well. Like, people just can walk in and say, hey, we're so happy that you're here. Enjoy a fantastic cocktail, but really just enjoy yourself thoroughly. And like, this is a place that you're supposed to call your home, and I want you to call it your home. If you're having a bad day, you should come talk to the bartender. And I'm just trying to bring that back in from all my time from living down there.
Yeah, it's super important. It's you can't really, like, you can train up on cocktails and spirits and food and everything else, but you can't teach hospitality. You know? It's something you gotta just have, you know. And to build that kind of a community with your like clientele and in your community, like just your neighborhood, it's really like, you know, what's a cool thing about that with Leon is like that you have those, like the first thing is that you walk through and you've got like these open windows, and it really is like inviting, and it's like, all right, we're gonna do this, and like. You guys, by the way, we got to talk about this. How the hell did you turn that thing around in 3 months?
Two words, Sue Fedroff.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, yeah.
You must have been in there like.
It was, yeah. I mean, well, you know, I've been a part of opening, this will be the fifth bar. And every single time, every bar we've opened, we've run into some sort of major blockage, whether it be the Landmarks Commission, where if you want to paint the front of the building, you have to enter paperwork and it sits on the desk for 6 months until somebody's like, okay, you can paint it, you know? But really, you know, or it's the DOB, you know, there are all these city agencies that can really delay mm-hmm. what you're doing. And we just, with Landa, you know, it was sort of, this is like the first project that we've done where everything just sort of fell right into place. It's like the landlord came to us because he loves what we do at Clover, and he wanted us to take his other space across the street, you know?
Yeah.
It was very old school Brooklyn, you know, like, want you girls to take my space, you know? Yeah. And his mom is 100 and she lives above Clover Club. She bought all of these buildings in the 1940s. And, you know, so that, he came to us, and then we were like, oh, we should talk to Ivy. And then Ivy's like, yeah, I'm definitely interested. And then we mentioned Sue Torres, and then Sue Torres came on. It was just like, you know, everything that we were trying to do, it wasn't difficult. As you know, a lot of the time, you try to do stuff and it's just one roadblock after the next with these openings. But
it's a lot of hurry up and wait.
Yeah, and with Landa, I mean, it's a ton of work. Getting a place open is really tough. But you know, Susan Fedroff, our partner at Clover, and Leanda project managed it. And we just had a really great GC and, you know, designer who assisted, a friend of Ivy's who lived in Guatemala. So he really got Ivy's vision. And it was just a very cohesive group of people. And things, because of that, were able to happen relatively quickly, you know.
Well, you've had practice doing it, so, you know.
Yeah.
You start to, like, look out for those things, you know, like, the things that at least are in your control, you know?
Yeah.
Especially having a good contractor, things like that.
Yeah.
It's like, It can really take a lot of the heat off of you. Especially because you've got a backyard, which is not open yet, but it's going to be.
It's going to be so nice too. In some way, and like you said, the drinks are. I mean, we do have the stirred and boozy drinks. We have all the drinks, but the menu is aimed towards the fact we are opening in summer. We do have the benefit of being in Brooklyn, where unlike Manhattan, people don't leave that much in Brooklyn during the summertime, during the weekends. Like when I used to work in Manhattan, which has been a few many moons, which makes me very happy. I prefer to stick in Brooklyn. I remember the summer happening, and all of a sudden you had your Monday scheduling on a Saturday because no one was in town. And I think that in the summer, the backyards is going to be so nice. You can get like buckets of bottled Palomas we have a kind of a pina colada-ish variation with some, it's frozen with cachaça and coconut and passion fruit, and like get one of those and just kind of relax, and it's going to be amazing.
We also have a couple of large format pitchers that are awesome, that have been really popular so far, and they both of them pair beautifully with Sue's menu. Yeah. The menu's been great so far.
Yeah, I mean, I can vouch for that for sure. Cool. Let's take a quick break, and we'll get back. We'll continue talking with Julian Ivy of Leanda in Brooklyn, New York.
The following program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy. And we've been talking about Leanda with Ivy Mix and Julie Reiner. And Julie, you actually just had a book come out very recently.
I did.
Craft Cocktail Party.
Yeah, yeah. It just came out. It's really geared towards home bartending. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was a lot of the recipes I've done over the years. But the gauge was kind of like, can my mom make this? You know, or can my sister-in-law make this? It's geared towards the non-professional bartender.
Cool.
So a lot of the crazy stuff we do at the bars was not included. And yeah, it's separated by seasons and then occasions within those seasons that you might have people over to your house. And
Yeah.
I think it's been really awesome to see it just from so many cocktail books. It's like the fad. Everyone's coming out with their own cocktail book right now. You know, it's like, oh, so everyone is doing it. And, you know, Jimmy Hinn really kind of paved the way for that cocktail book phenomenon happening. But most of them I've noticed are very much about us. Like, hey, mm-hmm. fellow bartender, this is how you freeze something with liquid nitrogen, you know?
Sure.
And, like, most people aren't going to go do that. Julie's book and also Jeffrey Morgenthaler's book, I think, are really good for just, like, hey, do you really don't know how to juice a lemon? Like, we'll teach you how to juice a lemon and then make something delicious with that juice lemon, you know?
Well, we get so, like, caught up in our bubble, you know?
Exactly.
We do live in this little bubble. I mean, it's a big world, but we get stuck, you know, and... whenever I do like articles for Bon Appetit, it's like I think about the same thing, you know. It's like I know that like if my mom wants to make this drink, she probably doesn't have access to, you know, like a RotoVap or whatever. Exactly.
Can you sous vide this, Mom? Yeah.
Or even like, you know, some simple things like when it comes to like ingredients, you know, regional ingredients and like. Well,
I mean, really, like, for me, the catalyst for the book was all of the emails and phone calls that I've gotten from family and friends over the years saying, you know, it's Thanksgiving and I have 8 people coming over. What should I make? You know,
right.
And the things that I would suggest to them and recipes and just how to do things in your kitchen. If you don't have a muddler, what do you use? You know, and kind of just making it, simplifying it for them. Anytime I gave a recipe for a syrup, I gave them like 6 things they could do with it, you know,
because
that was like my sister-in-law's complaint was like, oh, I made this raspberry syrup because there was this recipe, but now I have a quart of raspberry syrup and I don't have anything else to do with it. So,
yeah, I mean,
put in some champagne.
Yeah. One of Ivy's drinks at Landa is in the book, the Palo Negro, which is a sherry cocktail. We have a lot of sherry drinks at Landa.
Yummy.
And a beautiful photo of Ivy by Daniel Krieger.
Nice. He doesn't take bad photos,
no.
I've noticed.
No, he does not take bad photos. He's such a talented guy.
Yeah. You know, can you think of that one, like, that moment as a bartender that, or maybe even before you were bartending, that, like, that one trick, that technical thing, or, like, whatever it was that, like, you saw or, like, were taught, and you were like, oh, my God, like, the first, like, mind-blowing thing? Because I can give you like, an example for me.
Yeah, give me an example.
When you're juicing, like, limes or lemons, and, like, you've got it, like, in a hand press or even, like, in an electric juicer, like, the cutting off one end and then kind of, like, having it halfway, that way it's like you're not juicing 2 halves of a lemon or a lime.
Are you doing both at the same time?
You just do the whole thing. You just cut the very end off like a quarter-sized thing. You know what I'm saying?
That's genius.
And then you slit it. You kind of like score it halfway. So when it presses down in the juicer over the cone, it splits out, thing. Like, that blew my mind. You know,
that blows my mind. I've never done that.
I've never done that either.
I'm going to go.
Damon.
I'm going to go and teach
you
my
should write a book about that.
You know, I started a book, but I knew it wasn't.
Well, life
wouldn't
gives
be
you
as good as yours.
Damon Bolton.
Yeah.
It's all those things, though, like, that are, like, I don't know. Because to me, like, with being a bartender, like, you're never going to know it all. And that's amazing. There's always more to learn, which is why we have all these great books now, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember Thomas Watt one day, I've mentioned this several times on the show, but it kind of blew my mind that I had never done this, because once we started using like glass chillers, we thought we were like the coolest shit, you know? and we, you know, it really is, but like, he was like, no, man, like when you're making a Sazerac, it's like you should use a room temperature glass and chill it with like crushed ice. And I was like, but why wouldn't, I'm sure, but what, I don't know. And then he was like, but the thing, think about it. It's got an absinthe rinse. And if you just like spritz absinthe into a cold, dry glass, you're not opening it up the way that you would normally drink like pasties or absinthe. Mm-hmm. So he's like, swirl some like Scotsman pebble ice in there. You've got a layer of water. And then when you hit it with the absinthe, it actually
dissipates.
Opens up. So
a solid point.
Yeah. Can you think of any of those that ever popped up and you were like, damn it, I'm a bartender now?
I remember I have a funny Dale DeGroff story, like really early on in my career. You know, because when I started out, there kind of was nobody. There wasn't anybody to teach me stuff. I was talking to the chef about flavor pairings, and then Dale heard about the drinks I was doing at this place called C3. And he hired me to do this event with him, and it was at Cipriani, and it was like the same day I met Leo DeGroff, Steve Olson, and Andy Seymour all on the same day at this event. And I remember being in the back watching Dale cut pineapples, and I had never cut a pineapple for garnish in the same way, and I was like, oh, that's genius. You know, I was like, cutting it down the center and scoring it before you cut it. Anyway, it was, and that was one of those sort of aha moments of like, I can't believe I never cut it that way.
Yeah. I mean, those are like, I don't know, that's kind of like what
it's
I
very
look
basic
for.
Example.
No, that's it. It's always the things that are like super simple that you tend to like overlook, or the information just wasn't there. Cause like, you know, like,
I can go to like Booker and Dax and like be like, oh wow, this is awesome. You're using like red hot pokers and drinks and, you know, like that kind of stuff. But then it's always like, wait, oh man, that's how you're supposed to hold a shaker. I've been doing it wrong for 12, 15 years.
Or you ever see people who bartend in a way that's like doesn't make any sense? Like I could never, I forget who, but there's this woman who I saw bartending in San Francisco. I can't remember who it was, but she stirred like as if she like were like whipping, like as if she like were whipping batter, yeah, or something. And I could never do that, but it worked so well for her. She's just like, I'm like, how did this is so bizarre how she was doing that. I'm like, what? And I tried it at home, like, what? That's not working, you know? Like, how do you do this? And but yeah, it's really funny. I remember.
But maybe she got into it from like the culinary side, and that was just like totally like natural.
She was so damn fast. She like whipped out drinks like this, and it wasn't like she was whipping the ice. She was stirring perfectly, but it was like this weird arm breaststroke movement. It was so weird. Like, oh, it works for you. That's great. But yeah, I think my little thing is, I remember when I used to, you know, living in Guatemala, we had to slice limes all the time. Everything got a lime in it. But I used to just slice a lime in half, and then cut it into three parts, and then cut each one down the middle. And the first time I saw someone cut a lime in half, score it down the middle, and then cut it in three parts, I was like, what?
Yeah, that's a big one.
Like, that's a big insane one. I spent 4 years of my life doing this the wrong way. This is nuts.
That was pretty much what Dale did with the pineapple.
Yeah, it was crazy.
All the way down.
Like, yeah. It was crazy.
It's amazing.
Genius.
Yeah.
How did you know?
How have I gone through life without doing that?
Yeah, that's a big one. Another one for me is like the, when the first time that like this is so dumb and I never do this, but you know the banana garnish, the dolphin?
Yeah, yeah. Oh yes.
Dude, that blew my mind. Like, and apparently that was in a like a,
it was in a book that a, Brian like a, Miller was toting around.
Yeah, but it was like a garnish, like a culinary garnish book from like Germany or like from like the 70s or 80s or something like that. Or
that's so funny.
Dude. And it's got a lot of crazy stuff in there.
It's but, a cool
but,
book.
Yeah, but that's going back to, you know, like the shared information that we have nowadays with our industry. It's like it's really, it allows us all to like really advance and give better product and it, you know, like to a certain extent, better customer service. Because if we're actually caring about like these steps of making like our job easier or making the garnishes prettier or like more thoughtful like flavor pairings, then gives us pride in our work, and then we want our customers to experience that as well. So I think it's like keep saying it's just the coolest time, and it keeps getting cooler.
I agree. I think it is a good point that all this geekery, I think that's the right goal. The geekery is leading way so that we can spend less time with our noses and our jiggers and more time like communicating with our patrons. I think that's the right way to think about it. And sometimes, you know, you get people who's like, the geekery is the geekery, like that is the end goal. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I mean, I can geek out when we're on a radio show. We're geeking out right now, like, no way, cutting limes, that's amazing, you know. But in the end of the day, my favorite thing is just to, like, I'm so glad that Landa is open, as I'm sure your happy Grand Army is open, to sit there in my bar and talk with people who I like who also like my bar, you know. And it's like, okay, great, this is great, like the world is complete, it's like, this is good. And that funny trick that you now have taught me about choosing lines will just make me have more time to spend time with people in my bar who like my bar, you know?
Well, it's, you've got Jesse Harris working over there too. So he's, he definitely, like, I saw him the other day, we were juicing, and this bar back of mine, his name's Henry, and it's his first industry job. We've been open 3 weeks, and it's fun to like see everyone like teaching their tricks to him. It kind of like blew my mind like a second time when I saw Jesse show Henry, and I was like, man, this is great. This is just so like, awesome. I love being here right now.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. But like, it's also, it couldn't be, your bar couldn't like be run by two more amazing people. Yeah. Very impressive. Like, thank you're you. Two of the most amazing bar people I could ever know. And I'm very glad that I do. And I'm very glad that you came on the show today and might pop into Leanda after this. So
right. I'll be there all night.
All right. Well, cool. Yeah. So that's it for the Speakeasy today. Thank you so much again. Please go check out Leanda. You can definitely make a crawl out of it and go to Clover Club and Long Island Bar in my bar, Green Arc. Had to plug it. Sorry. All right. See you next week. Cheers.
Thank you.
XM. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.